Welcome back to Behind the Studio Door podcast. I'm your host, Molly. And
I'm the other guy, Christian Rivera.
We've also got our producer, Chris, here.
Hello, hello.
Hello, and I'm really excited to welcome our guest today, my friend Rivka. Welcome, Rivka.
Hi, Molly. Hi, everybody. Thanks for having me.
Hello. I'm so excited to have you here. So we're going to get right into it. As y'all know, we've been interviewing artists in Rochester and creative professionals and just trying to get the pulse for what's going on with folks behind the studio door. So Rivka, would you like to start by just introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about you?
Sure. My name is Rivka Simcha. I've lived in Rochester for a good portion of my life as a working artist, I'd say. I've really kind of come into my own as an artist in this city, even though I've been creating art in some capacity throughout my entire life. And I work in a variety of media. I do drawing, painting, collage, sculpture. I'm also a performer with the troupe The Velvet Noose here in Rochester. And I parent, which is also an art form. And
such an art form.
I work at the Memorial Art Gallery as security ambassador, so I'm really steeped in a lot of the culture there, too. And it's just been a really nice, you know, it's fitting to have this conversation around the new year. I feel like I'm excited for what's to come. I feel like there's sort of this perfect storm of some good things coming. So that feels really good.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the new year seems very relevant. That's totally. a good time to talk about this stuff.
Welcome to 2024, everybody.
Yeah.
It's a dragon year. You're excited.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So I actually love that you, as part of your description of you, talked about the creative practice of parenting, because hell yeah, we resonate so deeply with that.
We've had good conversations.
We have had so many good conversations about that. And I'm curious for you right now as a mom, and you have all these practices in your life with like dance, and you know, you're steeped in art and you make art. How does your creative practice, what does your creative practice look like right now in your life?
Well, I'm lucky enough to live in a house where one of the spaces up in the attic is just mine. I have a studio space up there, and, you know, I wanted to, that's something I really advocated for and had support from my partner to, like, make happen. So I definitely take a lot, he's given me a lot of permission to kind of just, like, secret away up there when needed. So recently I've had some good painting time up there. That being said, you know, I don't always have the luxury of just disappearing up there whenever I want. So it's a lot of just like a sketchbook on the couch while my son's playing video games or writing in the notes app on my phone, little ideas and thoughts for projects or poetry. It's also making sure I'm touching base with my troop mates. Like we meet, you know, we have a show coming up in March. So we're meeting, you know, weekly to talk through those things and exchange ideas in that way. I've really had to learn just to suspend expectations and let go of that perfectionism, which, you know, I'm not great at doing that just yet, but I'm always aware of the fact that it looks different than what I thought it would be like before I had kids. You know, I don't have the luxury of just like completely disappearing into the work like I could before that.
Right. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I resonate with that so much. And I think one of the things that we talk about and we're going to continue to talk about on the show is how people feel plugged in or not to the Rochester creative community. And I think like motherhood is such a big aspect of that, being a parent in general, because it really does affect, you know, like especially you have, your kids are still pretty little. Yeah. So it's like you can't go out. You still make it out to openings, which is like amazing. I feel like when my kids were really little, I was like, nope, you're not going to see me for several years. But what's that experience been like?
I have a truly supportive partner who loves parenting and loves being a dad. I mean, he loves being at home with them. It's not something that we really have a lot of conflict over. Obviously, I try not to take advantage of that and be mindful, and I do my fair share of the childcare as well. But he's well aware that the visibility piece is important. And I've brought the kids to openings sometimes too. At least when Naveen was younger, it was a little bit easier just because I would strap him to my body.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a moment for a while when you can just strap them to your body and then they're not really like a big personality yet. And then they get to the toddler age and you're like, oh, you are a whole ass ass human.
Yeah.
Asserting yourself.
Totally. And I've also had to give myself permission to not go to everything. Like, right. while it's good to be visible and attend these openings and, you know, network, it's also okay not to do those things. And, mm-hmm. you know, sometimes you want to get out there and sometimes you just need to stay home. So I'm just trying to find that balance. But I couldn't be doing it without my partner. I mean, he's super supportive.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah.
Can confirm. I would love to know more. You hit a little bit about you were talking about the Velvet Noose and your process with that, because that I feel like is community and creativity, you know, all wrapped up into one. And I'm curious about where that's at right now, where it's going, how that plays into your own personal creative process.
Yeah, I mean, I've been a part of the troupe since about 2019, and we're at the point now where we all know each other really well, and we know our strengths and our talents and the things that we bring to the table really well. So we just, as we always co-create the shows together. So we know what we bring to the table. We know how to push each other to sort of also expand past that. But it's also just really this fun process of the aha moments that happen when you have a bunch of wonderful minds and hearts at a table together who just are all working towards the same creative goal. And it's fun, you know, you were at this point where the show is like still in that shimmery, like the sea monster is just showing its scales out of the water phase. And then, but it's still a little bit elusive, but like, we're going to wake up one day and it's like, it's going to be a fully fledged show.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how it always happens that way. I totally bring it back home to my own work. But one other thing that's really been interesting right now is my parents are emptying out their house in the Bronx, and I was able to bring back a bunch of old canvases from my life as a high school student.
Wow.
And some of them are just beautiful stretched canvases that, like, yeah, I could reuse this. Like, these are expensive materials that I was using then because I had a lot of access to that stuff. So that's been cool. So I've been sort of cutting up old pictures and, like, collaging on the canvases and sort of just figuring out how to be sustainable with those materials in that way. Because mm-hmm. there's definitely a lot of like little paintings that never really made it, you know, things that I can reuse.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, has there been a change in your vision for what it means for you to be an artist throughout your life since kids or since, I don't know, we all have these lofty visions when we're like maybe a teenager or in our 20s and we're like, being an artist means X, Y, and Z. And what is that transformed? Like, what does your vision for yourself look like now? Does it feel more grounded? Is it still big? What does that look like?
That's such a good question, Chris. And I think for me, I'm noticing I'm centering the art more than I ever did. Mm. Art was always something I did, but I would think it just followed me around and I loved doing it and it felt great, but I never really acknowledged to myself or to the world that, like, no, I'm an artist and I want to make art for a living. Like, mm-hmm. I want to do this. Because in college, I took one studio class and then I got scared and was an art history major. And then I ended up with an education background and I'm just going to use art with kids. That's how I'm going to be an artist. And it wasn't enough.
Yeah.
And I kept trying to pretend like it was enough. So then I was a school counselor and I went to an expressive arts therapy, like mini grad program. And I'm going to like do counseling through the arts. And I just got really tired of advocating for it to systems and other people that don't see it the same way I do. So taking a step back from that world has really allowed me to parent fully when I was home with my kids before working, but also to really focus on just making art for myself and having that be enough and what like I really wanted to be doing instead of just having the art be secondary to like a psychological model or a professional model.
There's something to be said about, you have to make an active decision. And it's weird when you're talking about the time, right? When you're younger, time is in such an excess, right? You have so much, you have infinite time, you know, you're the wasting of time is an art form when you're younger. And when you have more responsibilities or more things that you care about, the act of making a decision to spend time doing the art almost heightens the, it's like it is a practice at that point, but it's something you really have to make a choice to do.
Yes.
And you have to make the time. And then it means something more, which can also make it a little weightier in your head too, which can be, it's a plus and a minus because mm-hmm. it makes it seem weightier, which means you can't sometimes be as free doing it either.
Sure.
It's a challenging dichotomy when you have to make that choice to spend that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I find that when there's more pressure, like I think that's what it brings, is like the fact that you have to be more intentional leads to, at least in my mind sometimes, like more pressure for it to lead to some sort of outcome.
Absolutely.
You know, that can drive me insane. And it has been lately, which is kind of why my energy is a little lower. I'm going to call that out because it's just, I've been feeling a lot of that.
Christian's in a puddle right now, and that's okay. That's part of the creative process.
I'm a delightful puddle. I'll still smile if you need me to smile.
Aw, like Ditto.
Yeah.
Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God.
Ditto's probably dealing with a lot of depression, I'm pretty sure.
Clinically depressed puddle.
Yeah. Yep. Mm-hmm. As many artists tend to be.
Yeah, it happens. I mean, you don't necessarily have to have that as like, I've also been unwinding that sort of depressed artist narrative a little bit. You don't necessarily have to be that to be successful as an artist or to make art. It can come from all sorts of different places. We were talking to others about that on this podcast, and I'm sure it'll come up more.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting other topic that comes through this too.
Yeah. And to me, that actually connects to something that you said earlier, Rivka, that just like really resonated, which is like this idea of, I acted like it was enough to not be doing like this art as much as I possibly could. And I think that that's actually, I have a theory that that actually leads to a lot of depression in people who are super creative or who have those channels extra on, those sensitivities that just want to make things. And when you aren't able to make things or you don't let yourself, it's really troubling. You know, like I've been more depressed when I'm not making things than when I am. Cause for me, it's like a therapeutic practice. And I'm wondering, because, you know, you and I have kind of similar processes. And so I'm wondering if it's been therapeutic for you to, you know, go back up to the attic when you're having a rough day and make something.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you picked up on that, that piece of it, because as I'm sitting here speaking, like, that's really the first time I've verbalized it that way. And it feels really right. Like that's where the miss was. I think I was so conditioned from a young age that I had to like find a job, and like artist is not a job, it's a hobby. Mm. And it's like, well, it's more than a hobby and it's more than a job. It's a way to survive and to seek therapy and seek support and to develop that self-knowledge and that resilience. And in meeting the Velvet Noose and joining that troupe, really has helped. I think by myself, I can only do so many things that within my own skill set and my ability and my resources, but sort of pooling that with other artists and other creatives has really allowed us to, you know, really lift off into this other world. So that collaborative aspect has also really helped too. Mm-hmm. And we all kind of hold space for each other, and our own life journeys really comes across in the work. So there's something to be said, you know, for me and my practice can be very solitary, and that feels good to some capacity, but I'm grateful for the collaborative efforts too. And I'm also grateful just to feel some liberation from, you know, trying to fit the art into other corners of my life as a secondary, like, limb, where, you know, I want to be led by that more.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, that leads into an interesting question that is a little bit of the impetus for me being here, being a part of these interviews, is like, I'm really curious about everyone's definition of community. Like, I'm just going to leave it open-ended. When I say community, what does that mean? Like, there's no right or wrong answer. I'm just curious about like what comes out of your brain when that word, because it's you're a part of the Velvet Noose specifically, but generally there's that word gets thrown around. So I'm just curious what that means to you.
Yeah, I think Rochester has a really nice art community. Like it's very, I found as like a very, you know, new person to it in some respects, I didn't feel like there was weirdness kind of shifting into it. I felt like it was really easy to meet other artists, and we have some really awesome places like Rocco and The Yards, and there's Muck Duck Studios. There's so many opportunities and very easily accessible like nests of community and connection that exist here. And I've really enjoyed that. You know, I grew up in New York City, and there was a time when I was wanting to play music out there. It was a long time ago. And I kind of always, I was definitely in a younger and like less confident place and didn't really know how to navigate. But my sense was it was a much more closed off and kind of insular world there. Mm. And I think Rochester is just a really soft landing spot for artists. And it's really nice to see how we support each other. And there's lots of opportunities to show work. And it's just been such a nice experience to be visible and to support others as well.
Yeah, I love that you used words like nest and soft landing spot when you were talking about community. I really resonate with that, like having a place not just where you can network, you know, but a place where you can actually connect to other people. Like this year especially, this is why we have the podcast, is because I've been really craving this sense of that, you know, weaving together these conversations and our lives and understanding each other and what community means to you, what it means to me, and how we might meet each other in the middle is like such an interesting conversation.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm wondering, when it comes to the communal aspects of your work and then the solitary aspects, what are, if you could talk about some of the ways that those connect, because I love when I see like Velvet New stuff that has your very clear visual impact on it, right? Because yes. You make a lot of visual work for Velvet New. Does it feel like it comes back into your own personal projects too, or inspires other things?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, So I met Harold in 2019 and we became really good friends and I joined the troupe, and that really became like, I would say that was very much like a catalyst for my like entering in a really tangible way, entering the art community in Rochester, because he was really connected with lots of places that I never heard of. He introduced me to the arts. He introduced me to Rocco, all these things. So, and he really encouraged me to expand how I was painting, to paint bigger, to really focus on these certain designs. We started making these scrolls, and they're just some of my favorite things I've ever made. And, you know, that kind of, I would call it intuitive art, because I don't have a lot of background knowledge around the why. It's like, when I lay out all the materials, this is what my body wants to make. And it became a really communal process. They're not just mine. Like, a lot of them are really, like, all the troop members have worked on them in some capacity. So it's really nice to have them. They're these artifacts from our work that end up on our performances. Mm-hmm. And they're also these standalone paintings that can exist and be shown. And, yeah, of course I take that back to my own paintings and my own work. And I wouldn't be where I was, like, without having that experience. So I just feel really happy that the journey took me there.
That's really awesome. Yeah, and I love that you mentioned the intuitive aspect of your work, and I wonder if you might talk more about that, like what that process is like for you, because we have such a similar way of working where it's like, I don't really have the meanings when I start working on a piece. I'm like, I just know that I have to work on it, and I have to put this piece of paper here and this mark here, and then it kind of forms itself. And it seems like some of your work is that kind of direction as well.
100%. Yeah. I feel like I have so much stuff that I've collected over time in my studio. And, you know, I think some artists have more of an approach where they know exactly what they want to use. They know what materials they want. They have it laid out. For me, it's very, let's see what happens next. Oh, I accidentally did this. Let's see this is a limitation now. Where will it lead? It's very, it just builds on itself. Like tissue paper, old paintings, adhesives, you know, I accidentally used Mod Podge instead of matte medium once. And that was an oops. And I had to sort of like work around that, you know. It's very like, it's like a science experiment kind of, you know? But it is kind of like you kind of hoard your materials over time, and then it's like, well, maybe I could finally use that egg for this, or like that scrap of paper fits here. But the cutting up of old ink works on paper has really expanded me now, because I used to just make these little like sort of 9x12 drawings, and they would sit in my portfolio not really doing anything. I didn't feel like they were as strong as some of my other work, but like I'm finding like collaging my own journey has been exciting for me right now. And sometimes things, the adhesive doesn't take to the canvas that well. So I, you know, I've been working with that and just trying to like, well, how can, this is intentional. Like maybe I do want it to look this way. And how can I bring out sort of like the uniqueness of this object?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'm really curious about this idea of how someone sees art. And I'm curious if you have a personal philosophy or intention or a way that you would like someone to look at your art. Like when they see it at a public space, you know, is there a way that you would, you know, ideally hope that they would look at the art or anything around that territory?
I think I would hope that people are just drawn to the forms. Like I would hope that, you know, the goal for me is just to have a composition that is inviting and interesting, you know, to give sort of a glimpse into an inner world. I work a lot with faces that are kind of distorted in the composition. I'm really excited about the painting I'm working on right now. And I'm also really, you know, I'm trying to take as many pictures of it as possible because I know over time it's going to look completely different. This is when I'm really letting myself just like slow burn. So I know when people see it, they're, you know, whatever the finished product is, like they're only seeing a fraction of that process. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of, it's a little bit bittersweet sometimes because like unless you're videotaping yourself from start to finish, making a wonderful reel for your Instagram, like they're not really... seeing what it's like, the life cycle of this work. Mm-hmm. But I would hope that when they do see it hanging, there is something compelling about like this arrived to this final place somehow.
Yeah, I think we're going to take a quick break and we'll come back with the second half of the...
Welcome to the world of Punches and Popcorn, where we dive into the bone-breaking and kung-fu-kicking world of martial arts cinema. Join us on the path as we explore a new movie every episode, discussing the history, fighting styles, science, and more from a broad range of fight films. Everything from Bruce Lee to Jean-Claude Van Damme to John Wick. There's plenty of room in our temple of couch potato style. So listen in and subscribe to Punches and Popcorn on your favorite podcast app.
Conversation.
So, I started with so, and I didn't want to start with so, but that's okay. I'm going to keep going. I have this bad habit. I've done a lot of podcasting and stuff, and it's just like, don't start with so. Just keep the conversation going. But here we go. Actually, Molly gifted me with one of your pieces, Rivka, and I absolutely love it. It's something that one of the few pieces locally here that I just sort of stared at, and it just drew me in. And based on what you were talking about, how you want someone to experience your pieces, that's kind of what I experienced, was just feeling like it just drew me in. And there was like this, I couldn't necessarily decipher what any kind of intention or meaning was, but I felt that there was meaning in it, or at least it attached to me as if there was some sort of meaning. So grateful that Molly picked that up for me, because it's in, I think it's in our bedroom now or somewhere in our house.
It's in the living room.
It's in the living room.
Yeah.
And it just feels
you
like
just
one of those.
Stood next to it for such a long time.
Yeah. And, you know, we're not in a place where we have a lot of money to invest in art, but we very much want to. Because for me, it feels like capturing a piece of someone's essence, you know. And it really felt like your essence was imbued in that piece. And I appreciate you as a person. We know each other personally. And being able to have that sort of totem for your artistic process and your experience and then who you are as a person imbued in that is really interesting. And I'm really grateful to have that. So I'm curious about this idea of totems and like meaning imbued in art and in your pieces in particular. I mean, is there an, I think I was trying to allude this to this with the question before, but like, is there an intentional meaning or does the meaning emerge? Is there intended, like, I think you know where I'm trying to go with the question.
Yeah. Well, firstly, thank you so much. I'm just so glad she lives with y'all and that she gets to spend time with you and you with her. And mm-hmm. just both of your support of that piece has meant a lot for me. I was really proud of that piece. I think that piece really steered me in the direction where I'm headed now, which is working with a lot of found objects and recycling old paintings and really just getting weird with it and being open to using unconventional materials. Like that piece is made up of a piece of an old painting that I made, I think, in 2020, some broken jewelry, a found wooden plate from the thrift store, you know, things that really kind of just came together, collage elements. And I just remember sitting in my studio just, like, agonizing over it, like, the placement of each bead. Mm-hmm. Like, how do I want it to be framed? Is it what's too much, what's too little? And it all kind of just coming together in this way. And just to know that it had such an impact on you guys just really means a whole lot. In terms of meaning, I definitely think for me, I think I try to stay on the surface of the process a lot, at least in the beginning. I don't necessarily go into it with a meaning in mind. Mm-hmm. I definitely have forms and ideas I like to play with. I like to play with faces. I like to, you know, women's faces, things like that. Kind of try to be a little bit unexpected with the way I use materials around it. You know, in that piece, I named the Venus of the Fruiting Body. And that the next piece I made after that is called Venus Decomposing, which is currently hanging at Rocco. And those two are very much like weird sisters, even though they are quite different from each other as well. But this idea of taking a face and de-skilling it and playing with the viewer's perception of beauty, something that can still be alluring, but also a little bit grotesque or unexpected. Mm-hmm. That's sort of where I'm on track to play with. And the current painting I'm doing now also is, you know, playing with those kinds of expectations around beauty.
Mm-hmm. Is that typically the theme you're playing with? Are there other themes that you explore, you know, in your art? Or are there territories that you're wanting to push yourself into that you haven't explored yet?
I think my natural cradle is grief and transformation and just kind of darkness to light to darkness again to finding, you know, how do you forge forth in a dark world? Where what light can you find? Hmm. Things like that. That's sort of just my natural interest. And, you know, The Velvet Noose is, we definitely play with themes like that too. So we are very much, you know, made for each other in that way. I've definitely found an artistic home there. And yeah, I'm definitely open to just working with more abstraction. And I really like just seeing what the materials provide, like, and just continuing to layer and layer and layer. And I definitely have, you know, themes of grief and transformation in the back of my mind always. Mm-hmm. And I'm open to moving into other territories as it seems to make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It definitely seems like your story, it is alchemized on the canvas, on the wooden, you know, plate, whatever it is. And that there are aspects of your experience, you know, that get transmuted into your work.
Yes. Oh, and Christian, you used the word totem. I thought that was really interesting. Like, yes, I want them to be like art objects. Like this is, and very much in The Velvet Noose too, the things we make for our work, they become artifacts. They're art objects that we use in our performances. They can also stand on their own as art pieces. Like I've created wings, sculptural wings for our performances, head pieces that we all use on stage, but they also kind of exist outside of time. So this, I mean, the bittersweetness of theater is that once it's over, it's over. Mm-hmm. But we have the luxury of being surrounded by these art pieces that we all make together. But I also think my individual art is becoming more of like thingly. It feels like this is an object. This like represents a moment in time. Mm-hmm. when I created it.
I love that word, thingly. Yes. Oh, that just tingled my brain.
The thingliness. Yeah.
But we've been watching, lately shows about, archaeology and, you know, really diving into artifacts that come through ancient stories and things like that. Now we live in a modern contemporary world, but we're constantly imbuing our energy, our art, our ideas, our values of the time, because 100 or so years from now, like the values are going to be different, not to mention 1,000 or so. And these are all representatives of this current period that we're dealing with, whether it's you wrestling with your things personally or relationships to the world. Like you were saying, like mm-hmm. light to dark to light, or vice versa, right? And I think, Molly, you were talking about how your work is very similar to Rivka's. And, like, just for relativity's sake, I'm really curious about how what that comparison is and how that connects to the totem idea for you too.
Yeah, I think it seems to me, since I've known you, Rivka, that you and I have a similar process in that we're both very intuitive. Yes. We're very like body kinesthetic. So it's like, oh, I'm going to grab this piece of paper and this texture feels good. And I want to layer this on this. And it's very like letting the process be the process. Yes. And kind of the painting makes itself. You're just a channel, a conduit who's like present. But like it makes me think of the idea of the creative genius where, you know, like in Greek mythos and ideas, the genius was something that visited you as opposed to, you know, in our capitalistic frame, we have this idea that someone is a creative genius, and it almost like puts a lot of pressure on the artist to perform or not. And yes. I much prefer that idea of like the genius visits. Right. And I'm just, the genius just finds me working. It's like this little, it's these creatures that come and like ideas that want to be born.
Absolutely.
You know?
It clicks in. Like I honestly, sometimes I feel like I'm in a fugue state.
Yes.
When I'm going, like when like the Venus pieces that I made recently, like I feel like I have memories of doing them, but like it's just so tactile and so just in my hands and in the piece, like that it becomes like a hyper focus and it all blurs. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would say the other similarity that I'm thinking about that I definitely want to highlight is the layers that become artifacts. Like I refer to my work as artifacts of the process as well. It's like there was a living process that happened here, and it's great that there's a painting that came as a result, but I would still do the process even if there wasn't a painting. You know, it's like, and I really like how you layer and how you take found objects, because that seems to be like kind of a Rochester flavor thing too, is like remixing a lot of stuff. And I feel like you do that really well.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, Molly, as you're talking, I'm thinking about your piece that's hanging in my dining room right now. I think it's a deconstruction. And there have been times like over this rough sort of fall into winter transition I've had where I've just looked at her kind of like leaning sideways against this like yawning black abyss that's kind of emerging through these layers of like the text pieces you used and like your saturated colors. And I've just felt such a kinship with her and like whatever she's carrying. So that, you know, that's sort of been like a totem into my own experiences, and it comes from you and like your own uniqueness of making it. So I just think that's such a powerful example of what we're talking about.
Yeah, thank you. That's really beautiful. And that's what I hope with, and I know it's what you hope as well, that people just take your work if they have it in their home or they see it and they can just, I really want people to find a landing place for their eyeballs and their body, you know, to just be like, oh, even if they don't realize it, they're taking a moment with themselves to experience the art, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it validates your humanness and like how you know, painful it can be sometimes and how messy, to have like art that carries that is really important.
Yeah. Resonance does a lot.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I'm going to just take there was so much there, and it's hard for me because I'm such an analytical monster and I live in a, I process is something that always works for me versus like, I don't put in emotion into things. I don't put like, it's just like, I love the process and I love getting information out and I love things like that. And kind of what I was wondering when you're talking about all that, and there's so much there with these pieces and the feeling that both of you both get from creating and perceiving the artwork. I guess the thing that stuck to me was, how do you sit down for something like that? How do you, like, it seems like it's such a low, it seems loaded to me. Like when I sit down, I have to get through my inertia just to sit down and even talk into a microphone or do the other things that I do. How do you sit down for something like that and like choose to start doing that? Is it just repetition? Does it take a lot to get into that kind of mood? It's just so alien to me. And I struggle seeing, my wife Carrie is a artist as well, and it's not the same, but she has pieces like that are hugely emotional, and they don't, it seems like they happen sometimes, but the process of sitting down seems like it would be challenging in those circumstances.
I think it really, sometimes it really depends on the state of my studio. Like if my studio is like super messy, I have to clean it before I do anything because things just are in the way. It's like a logistical, and that's frustrating. Sometimes it's like, well, fuck, I don't want to clean it right now, you know? Yeah. And it's like, I have to do something else. But sometimes I'll just, I work so quickly and I think so quickly that before I even know it, I'm working. Like I don't sit down and make an outline. Like I'm just up there, I'm moving, I push things over, I'm like, well, I need to get the ink now, or like I need the tissue paper. It's just such a body response to the space and like what I viscerally think the painting needs. And it's not even think, it's like such a knee-jerk, visceral, this is what's happening next. There's no logic to it. And it's, I wish there was a better way to, does that make sense?
For me, it's a compulsion.
Compulsion, yeah.
It's a compulsion. Like, I can't, you were like, how do you sit down? And I was like, I can't fucking not. I have to, because I've got all these feelings. And it's the way, so it's the way that I wonder if you feel the same about this, Rivka. It's how I digest my feelings. It's how I like alchemize it into something that makes sense. And it's almost like how I journal and understand. It's like, I will just be in this fugue state. Like Kasama style, just like drawing circles for 3 hours, and then all of a sudden I come out of it and I'm like, oh, okay. Like I'm feeling this kind of way about this thing now. I understand. It's almost like the body has to like digest. Does it feel that way for you?
It's such a, the process happens and then I think about it,
right?
You know, like. And I think if the thinking is happening too much, I need to like stop and do something else. I find sometimes I need to have multiple things happening at once because like I just want to keep going and going and going. And sometimes that's not what the painting wants, but like I need to keep going. It needs to go somewhere, like a smaller painting that will dry and maybe I'll cut up and use later. It's just like,
I'm glad that you mentioned that. Like I always have to have a chaos painting. Like that I'm fucking up all the time. So if I feel like I'm like, oh, I'm actually doing like these really like intricate line work things on one piece, and I feel this almost like vomit of like feelings coming up, I'm like, oh, I need to like throw some paint around, and I don't want to fuck this painting up, so let me move to this other one and like you know, make a mess kind of a thing.
Absolutely. I have an easel, I have a computer desk, and I have a drafting table, and I have a third desk, and they're all covered in stuff right now. But things. And I end up just, I'm like crouching by my easel. I wish I had some like mice who I was friends with who could just clean my studio for me.
Oh my gosh, like Cinderella.
Yeah. That would make you a ball gown.
Of course I need a ball gown.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, it sounds like there's something like feral that can get tapped into in certain processes like that, where things are kind of a mess and you're just like, you know what? Let's just throw paint around. Let's go with it, kind of thing. Because I resonate to what you were talking about, Chris, with like being too analytic. Like I can get into that too much. Even with the start of this segment, I was like, let me think for a second. And I was like, no, I just need to start talking. I just need to start doing. Like, I mean, talking and doing this sort of thing is somewhat of my art. And getting into that process of just talking is something I need to allow myself to just do, or to just make something, or start, you know, throwing something around and see what happens. Because there can be a lot of pressure to try to be analytic or conceptual, right? You need to be this like thoughtful artist that has this very specific thing to say.
And some artists are like that. Like,
well, yeah, that, that's know? Not for to sure. shit. Yeah. That's not to shit on that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, but that's not my thing.
Right. It really highlights like the differences between different brains and bodies and personalities. And like
100%.
Everyone's process is so different.
Yeah,
just, fascinating.
I just thought it was an interesting like stopping point because it's such a personal thing, the process. Mm-hmm. And I know it, as a partner to an artist, I struggle with it because I can just work through whatever. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about the space, like she's very much that, like the space is not clean. I can't be clean in my thoughts. I can't move on to the next thing. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I don't know. I just go on to the next thing. It's just what I do. Mm-hmm. And I just found it a fascinating little stopping point. So
yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for allowing the diversion.
I appreciate that question, actually. Well, that's why I like having more than two people at the table and more than, you know, different kinds of personalities, because we all bring different facets to it. And it's a perfect segue to kind of our ending thing. Because I guess like the practical application is, just maybe start doing some stuff, like throw some paint around, right? Like let it be messy. And I'm wondering for you, Rivka, what kind of things are you whetting your appetite with in that creative process right now? Like what is the edge for you of what you're curious about creatively that you're exploring or wanting to explore that maybe you haven't touched yet?
Oh, I miss writing so much. I was writing songs for guitar and performing them. I was writing poetry. I wrote, you know, I participated in NaNoWriMo, which is National Novel Writing Month, you know, long time ago, but I did it. I 50,000 word manuscripts that I want to do something with, like not necessarily in a traditional like publishers novel place, but I'm sure I can sift through words and find where they fit onto a canvas. In fact, I, as a undergraduate, I studied the work of Anselm Kiefer, who was a German painter, very, very monumental sort of landscape painter. Actually, three of his amazing canvases exist in Buffalo right now at the AKG. Definitely go see them. They're phenomenal. I openly wept. But I bring him up because he also loved writing, and he made, you know, is a very successful painter. But you can see he writes the titles of his paintings on the painting. You know, he really uses text, and he's very moved by poetry. He's made a cycle of paintings inspired by Paul Celan, who is a German language poet. And so I really want to hold space for more of my writing. I mean, I've written for The Velvet Noose. That's been part of my contributions to the group, and that's felt really good. We have a lot of other talented folks who contribute as well. I want to find like a nest, a home, like where does my writing fit into this? And I don't necessarily want to force it either, but I just have, I think curiosity is good. It's like, how, like, where can it go?
It's a little seed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just little nuggets.
Little nugget. A little thingly, which is a word you gave me.
The thingliness of it.
Yeah, I'm grateful to have that word to take away from
brought to you
this.
By the You're word welcome. Of the evening. Yes. Thingly.
Thingly.
Well, thank you so much for being on our show and talking to us. And where can folks find you, Rivka?
Yeah, I'm on Instagram at Shulamith in Shadow. And please also follow The Velvet Noose. You'll get updates about our upcoming production in March at The Muck.
Add those in the show notes for sure. Thank you so much. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you all next time.
This has been a presentation of the Lunchador Podcast Network.
Art process is confusing.
For real, for real, for real.